You never know who I'm going to have on this show, but I can promise you it's always going to be a great listen. I've had all walks of life on this show talking about their lives, their experiences, and it's reality. And sometimes reality can be stranger than fiction. I've had some of the biggest celebrities in the world on this podcast, and it's thanks to you that we continue to grow. So make sure you hit that subscribe button. Check out all the archives. Check out my daily podcast called Interesting Times with Beck Lover, where every day I comment on the news, interesting headlines around the world that I gather so you don't have to waste your time scrolling. I keep you informed, and I put my crazy twist on what I think is happening. But on the Beck Lover podcast, it's always about our guest. Today, I have a childhood friend. I grew up with him. I've known him my whole life. He's going to come here and be very vulnerable with us today. He's going to talk about his life experiences, the darkness of drug addiction, alcoholism. He's had a very crazy up and down life. He never gives up. He never surrenders. He's the founder of Jump Life. This is a crew dedicated to bringing awareness to addiction in a very creative way, but I'm going to let him tell his story about that. I got my friend, my brother, Patrick Tanzi, in the house.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate it. It's good to be here.
Pat, what's going on, brother?
Hey, nothing. Just, trying to promote your mental health, trying to help people, use nature, hobbies, activities. I created a new sport, jump ball. Jump life means jumpstart your life, trying to help people heal, trying to get addicts out of their house. And we're crushing it. Cliff jumping all over the East Coast, traveling to Hawaii, next Oregon, North Cal, maybe Brazil.
Before we get into what Jump Life's all about.
Okay.
And you've already said a little bit, it's about jumping off cliffs and bringing awareness to the struggles of addiction and just how hard it can be to get out of that extremely vicious cycle. A lot of people never get out. A lot of people get out for a little bit, they go back in, and it's a big problem we have globally, not just here in the US. Let's go back to the beginning, man.
All right.
Me and you have known each other since I was in at least fourth grade.
Long time.
Which means you were in second grade.
Yeah.
We grew up along the river in Edgewater. We're called rats. River rats.
Yes, sir.
We grew up in a very industrial town at that time. A lot of rundown factories, abandoned. We were considered lower class. Was a lot of families that didn't have a lot of money. You didn't see any nice Mercedes or nothing driving through town. We weren't known as a town to live in. We weren't a place where people thought, oh, that's a great place to go live. Let's go live there. And we were surrounded by a lot of people who were battling substance abuse, drugs, alcohol. And we grew up in what was considered one of the rougher, crazier towns back at that time. Today it's Beverly Hills.
Big time.
But back then, when we told people where we're from,
they have no
in point. Our county,
it's different.
Let's just say, we got to give left to Edgewater. Back then,
there was a dirt. It was trash.
Edgewater, Jersey.
There was nothing in there.
It was all abandoned fields,
couple bars,
factories, Alcoa, toxic fucking land.
Yep.
Okay, and everyone was lower. If they were lucky, maybe lower middle class.
Yep.
But a lot of below middle class,
struggling. Yeah.
So we grew up. I knew your brothers, your mom, your dad, everyone. Rest in peace to Joe Tanzi, your older brother. You just went through one of my worst nightmares. I experienced what it is to lose someone that you look up to, you call your older brother. That was a very difficult time for me when I lost mine. You lost yours. But I wanted to shout him out because this was a guy full of life, a guy that made us smile, a guy that was down for the town. He was ready to beat up anyone who fucked with us back then,
right.
Who fucked with our town. He was like, you fucking with Edgewater? Like, he would...
Loyalty.
And this guy was shredded. I mean, you're shredded, but he was shredded.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
And he was just such an amazing athlete, man. He was no joke. I was always scared he'd beat the shit out of me when we were younger. But thank God he always liked me, and he got a kick out of me. And you guys would come over and terrorize my house on fucking cabbage night and just on any regular weekend night because you guys were bored.
Your dad would chase us away.
My dad would come outside, being the Albanian he is, trying to find out who's fucking...
Your dad's the man.
Screaming and shit. And I always knew it was you guys. I never ratted you out, man. My dad's like, do you know who they are? I said, no, they're from another town. They're from Cliffside Park. They're not Edgewater kids. They love me. And I knew it was you guys. I would hear you guys going back. Yeah. Shout out to Perry Gammon.
Yep.
Those are the funny ass days, man.
Yeah, yeah. Good times.
But in any event, you really went through a lot.
Yeah.
Let's start at the beginning, man. When I met you, you know, you were young, you know, drugs weren't really in the game. How did you slowly start getting into becoming an addict? Like, how did you become an addict, man? When did you first smoke drugs or say, like, what was your first substance that you had?
Smoking weed at age 12 and drinking 40s.
At 12?
At 12 years old, yeah. Playing basketball, eventually lost track of, you know, sports and just started drinking and smoking blunts. And, you know, back then it was, that's what people did, hang on the corner, smoke blunts, drink 40s. And then it gets a lot worse. You know, the age 12 is when it started.
So by age 12, you're already drinking some alcohol.
Yeah.
And you're smoking weed.
Yeah, a couple 40s a day.
A day?
Yeah.
What the hell made you do it so early, man?
I don't know. I was born an alcoholic. I just didn't know until I got sober later on. But I just liked the feeling. I liked the party scene. I liked the way it made me feel. It was like... there was nothing really to do back then, you know, except for throw rocks at cop cars and run away and drink 40s or play and smoke blunts or play ball. You know, it was really nothing to do.
Would you get in trouble a lot?
I got in trouble a lot.
I'm talking about like middle school to high school years.
I got locked up in JDC when I was... Juvenile Detention Center when I was 12, I think, or 13, and then 17. You know, back then I was hustling a little bit and...
How long did you have to stay in?
I did like about a month in JDC, and then I did 4 months in a halfway house, and then I did like 4 months house arrest. That was just one time.
At any point during this earlier part of your life, do you ever question, like, what the hell am I doing? Do you ever say, why am I doing this shit?
No, I used to say, why me? Why did they fucking get me?
Why did I get caught?
What the fuck is everybody else doing, you know? Or maybe somebody was ratting me out, or, you know, I was young mind, but I was a brave heart. But, I didn't have money back then, you know, like we were talking about, we were poor. So I just wanted what everybody else had, and I just wanted to have money in my pocket, you know?
So when you say you started hustling, you actually started selling drugs back then when you were younger?
Yeah. I used to sell some weed, got involved with some people, you know, I live right over Hudson River across from Manhattan. So we'd make trips over and,
where you went to, like the Heights to
Manhattan, Harlem. As a young...
Now, how old are you at this time?
I was like 13, 14, 15.
You would go into Harlem?
I would go into Harlem.
And this is at a time when Harlem was still...
Not safe.
Not safe at all, no. You know, especially for a white boy.
Yeah,
Let's be real.
It was definitely not safe. And we were picking up a couple ounces at a time, too. And...
So you'd go there, get a bigger quantity, then come back to the Jersey side, smaller bags, and try to turn a profit on it.
Yeah, some small time shit.
Was it even worth it? I mean, money wise?
I would say, you know, no, it wasn't worth it. And, you know, for me, I'm sober. I it's never worth selling, I mean, hustling. But we were stupid kids back then, and we didn't know better. You know what I mean? We just wanted to get high.
Were you able to get money out of it at least?
Yeah, we made some money, but not like super money, just like regular.
Have a couple hundred dollars a week in your pocket.
Yeah, we did okay. Pretty much.
But nothing crazy.
Nah, nothing crazy.
Did you ever have any crazy experiences when you were hustling?
Are we talking, my whole life has been a crazy experience.
Well, let's say while you're doing this, did you ever have any close calls when you had to go pick up or re-up, as they say?
I've gotten arrested many times over the city. I got beaten up a couple times by cops.
Why do the cops like to beat you up, bro?
Well, I guess when you run from the cops, they don't like running because some of them are not in shape. And so, do you want me to tell you the story of what happened?
I want to hear. We want details. That's the whole point. How are we going to learn?
One time I was running from the cops, and I took off. You know, I was in shape back then. And
you really were in shape, though.
I don't know how you were internally,
but exterior, you were always a work of art, by God.
I got out the car, and I was already two blocks ahead of him. What happened was I hit into a deli, and because I was out of breath.
This is in New York?
This is New York. It's NYC.
And why do you think they were trying to stop you?
I guess they were watching the spotters.
So you were going to pick up. They were probably looking to see who they can catch.
That's it. Just a random check.
The Giuliani years, no? Or Bloomberg?
I
think it's Giuliani, bro.
Giuliani, yeah.
You're saying the earlier part, yeah.
Yeah, Giuliani, yeah. This is maybe 15, 16.
Yeah, where everyone was a fucking cop. Everywhere you looked was a homeless guy acting like he's homeless.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a cop.
Back then, they'd be up. You don't tell anybody. It's, you know... You don't make a big scene. You just try to get out of jail and go back home, you know?
Now you get paid.
Oh, now people will throw you under the bus, try to sue you, and you know what I mean? Like, you're not going to win. So,
well, New York now, they can't at all. Like, well, if you can prove that they used excessive force and they don't have immunity anymore.
Listen, up north over here, you got to be tough to fucking be here. You know what I mean?
So whatever. These guys are chasing you.
Two detectives chased me. Two other cops, two cars. We're on foot. I run like two blocks, make a left, and then run another block and make a right.
Your adrenaline's going crazy.
Adrenaline's, yeah, I'm on fire. I'm just like, and I'm already high as a kite. And so I dip into this bodega. We call them bodegas, the delis. And there's a bum outside. And the cops, they don't know where I'm at. And I'm in there trying to buy a piece of gum, act like I'm, you know. And he tells the cops that I'm inside the deli.
Homeless dude.
They go in, they beat the shit out of me. Throw me in the...
How bad?
Maybe two guys, maybe five punches each. My stomach, my head.
Hard as they could.
They roughed me up a little bit, yeah. And then they threw me in the back of a van. I had to wait... like fucking 8 hours just to get out of there.
And did it take you? Central Booking?
Central Booking.
So you've been to the Tombs?
I've been to Tombs like three times.
A lot of people are not from New York or have never been to the Tombs. Now, I've had a few of you friends I've grown up with. I won't mention any other names.
Yeah.
Who have been to the Tombs. That's One Police Plaza, Central Booking. What was that experience like, bro?
Well, when you get old, when I was younger, it was, you know, scary, you know what I mean? Because you're locked in there with like 100 other people, and they're all thugs from New York, so. But they were all misdemeanors, so, like, you know, and I was used to that kind of lifestyle.
So how long did you have to stay in? Do you remember?
You got to stay in until Monday.
So you was a weekend, you were...
You got to stay all
So you're in there for almost 3 days?
Yeah, bologna sandwiches and mustard.
And what's it like in there?
It's a shit show. It's a shithole. You gotta wait patiently for till
I heard that the toilet in there is like a throne there. You have to sit
disgusting.
In. So yeah. Explain that.
Did
you take a dump while you're in there?
Yeah, you have to. You know what I mean?
So what do?
You don't touch the toilet bowl.
Everyone's just squatting over this fucking
thing. Yeah. Well, there's different rooms. Different
no privacy or no?
Nah, no privacy, but there's different rooms.
So you just gotta squat and shit in front of 100 people.
Listen, you gotta do what you gotta do. You know what I mean?
Were you comfortable doing it?
Probably not.
You were like, hey, fuck you. I got the tansy fucking trunk.
I wasn't worried about it. I was more worried about going home, you know what I mean, at that age. But later on, you know, you got to wait for the judge. And
now, I got boys. I got three of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, God forbid I have to deal with this type of shit, man. It's very stressful to any parent. How did your parents handle all this, man? Like, you guys were giving them a hard time?
Oh, man, we embarrassed.
Because your mom's one of the sweetest women I've ever met in my life. And your father, mad cool.
Dad's ex-mayor embarrassed him. You know, looking back on now, it's, you know, it's not okay. But again, you know, I was an addict.
Because people think, oh, you come from like, your parents are still together. People think, oh, it's only kids that come from like they don't have both their parents, or they only have their dad or their mom. Like, no, like you had both parents. They're great people. I know them. Yeah. So I don't think it's always just because the way your parents raised you or didn't raise you. I don't think
so. It's the people you hang out with, your environment.
I think it's your environment. Absolutely. We were around a lot of people that did not have.
No role models.
Good role models. They had no family, a lot of broken homes, divorce. These are the side effects, man. So even though you didn't come from that personally, you were surrounded by that. And I can testify because I grew up with you.
Yeah, well, they used to kick me out of my home. So I would live like a year here, 2 years there on people's couches. You know, I was just a...
They were probably happy at that point, and I hate to say it, but they were probably happy that you turned 18, so they weren't responsible anymore.
Yeah, it was rough. My mom was no joke. If you didn't have the rent money, you ain't living in a house.
If you're a man's age.
So she would have all the family members move into my room, whatever, and that was it. You're on your own.
Yeah, you want to fuck around all day, then... That's it.
Tough love. That's the only way to get sober, by the way, is tough love. You can't, don't support any addicts, you know, let them fall. Don't catch them.
Now, you did weed, but did you ever cross over to anything bigger?
Cocaine, pills, ecstasy, all that.
All of them?
All of it.
Were you doing a substantial amount?
So we're moving forward now.
So you progressed from selling some bags here and there, then you start doing coke. Do you remember the first time you ever did coke?
Probably around 21.
You don't remember the first time, though?
Oh, no.
You don't remember who you were with or what you did?
No.
Okay. That means it was good shit because you don't remember.
Maybe high school. Maybe even like senior year.
So does any of that take over and become more like in your life than just weed?
Yeah, I was a full blown Oxycontin alcoholic, cokehead. You know what I mean? I was
like every day, bro.
Yeah, I had a habit. Eventually, an alcoholic is what I am, and eventually, it was always like for like 8 years, it was coke and alcohol, then it was Oxycontin and alcohol.
Do you feel that alcohol is a gateway drug? I believe they don't say it. They said marijuana. Absolutely. I think alcohol
is what starts it all.
Is the most dangerous fucking substance,
without a doubt.
Because it, in my opinion,
no, you're right.
You know, you're like, oh, you feel like really good, invincible. Let me try this. Let me try that. Let me try this. Let me try that. Fuck it, because you feel good.
Yeah, well, when you go out to events drinking alcohol, that's when everybody asks you, yeah, you want to try something?
Listen, I've been in nightlife, you know how long.
I know, you're the nightlife king.
I also grew up with you. You ever see me do a line of coke?
No.
You ever see me do a hard drug?
Nope.
Do you ever even see me drunk except for maybe when we're out in the nightlife and we were drinking anyway?
That's a hard pass, no.
Growing up, you know me my whole life. They've been calling me Beck Lover for how long?
I think since we were on the same basketball team in like second, third grade.
So it's not some name
you
I
invented. You were born Beck Love. That's
pretty
your name.
Much.
That's your name.
We grew up, you know, like I said, in that environment. And I mean, I did remember seeing you kind of, you guys started going down that road. And, you know, it wasn't just you. It was like half the neighborhood.
Yeah.
We had I felt bad.
Big crowd.
Yeah, it was everyone I grew up with, bro.
Yeah.
And then people go like, you know, how come you didn't fall into that? Well, for me personally, I think what saved my ass from the peer pressure, because it was every day, bro. Everyone went at the park, here, hit this joint, or do this, or hey, you want to take a bun? I can't tell you how many times I was offered hard drugs.
Yep.
What kept me out of it was a couple of things. One, spirituality. I was always somewhat religious. So I was praying to God. In my faith, you can't drink alcohol.
Yep.
Who knows? If I drink alcohol, I probably at that age, but I didn't drink till much later in my life. If I drank earlier on, I might have done those things. So for me, faith saved me. It wasn't my, because... And now that I'm a parent myself, you really can't control what your kids do. You try to guide them as much as you can. You try to do your best.
Yeah.
Ultimately, they're going to choose. You know, I got three boys. I got to be prepared for those phone calls one day because I don't have control over their life. I can only try to guide them. That's all a parent can do. People choose their path. I'm pretty sure Jeffrey Dahmer, his mom didn't teach him how to fucking eat people, right? But it's like you do your best as a parent. The rest is up to the kids. So for me, yeah, my parents gave me that strong upbringing, but I can say 100% without my faith, I think I would have went much deeper and much darker in my life. And I'm glad that I didn't. I think it saved my life, to be honest with you. You're a spiritual dude?
I am.
Believe in God?
I believe in you. I believe in the universe. I believe there's a God.
You believe a higher power?
Absolutely.
You think I'm crazy when I'm saying what I'm saying to you?
Nope. You're right on the money.
So we grew up together. You really go off the handles now. You're basically living here, living there, selling drugs, doing drugs.
Fighting.
Not really working any career or any job, like real job.
Construction, it was my job, but they, you know, on and off, and that's a tough life to live, you know, construction. Very tough. Because half the year you're working, half the year you're unemployment, and there's drugs all over, I mean, back then. You know, my childhood was, you know, just really, really, people say, oh, they're from here, they're from there, and then they're tough, and they grew up on the streets, like, I lived that life. I mean, I was there. I've been jumped. I've been brawls, hustling around really bad people. You know, back then you think that it's, you know, it's the cool thing, but or they got you back. But you know, we would go to Staten Island, New York, house parties, and just you know, one false move. One of my boys touches one, kicks game to one of his girls, and now you got a 20-on-20. You know, fight neighboring towns, and you know, just growing up in a growing up in by the river you know, back then it wasn't, you know, it was warfare. You know, if you did drugs and you partied, you know, I've been stabbed. I've had guns pointed at me. You know,
that's so. The craziest thing that's ever happened to you is actually being stabbed.
I've been jumped. I've been hit by three cars. I think I was ran over once when I was little, like on accident. But the most craziest thing I've ever done was I got stabbed all across my my chest and my neck.
How many times?
I just remember it's blood everywhere. Just
you almost died.
Oh yeah, no, ambulance came. It was like 3 a.m. after a long night.
Wow.
Yeah, I was living in a trap house with one of my buddies, and I didn't want this girl coming around because she was like, you know, she's a hood rat and she's bringing her dogs over and shit. And we wanted to, it was huge. She was making us hot. We were, you know, we were hustling and shit. So I come back after long night party, and she moved in. I told him, yo, she's not to be trusted. So he's leaving. So I break the door, and, you know, we go at it, get into a scuffle. You know, I laid him out, and then I went home to my parents. Like 3 hours later, in the basement, I had like a small bed just for like to hide out sometimes, because back then there was I needed an extra place to go, and he tried breaking the house, so
to keep fighting.
Well, yeah, hours later, yeah. So he came in with a knife. He came out with a knife. So I, you know, this is like 4 a.m. It's dark out. So me, I was born like a braveheart. You know, I just go back, go outside, and just start swinging. You know, but he had the knife, and you know, I called my brother Joe. Said Joe was living at my mom's house that time, and said, "Joe, brother Blatt's here. I'm going outside to get him." Boom, we get into a scuffle. I beat the shit out of him. You know, but he got off a bunch of cuts. And after I was done, when adrenaline wore off,
you're like, shit, I'm stabbed.
Yeah, I'm fucked.
And, so ambulance took you? Did you lose consciousness?
Cops came. I didn't lose consciousness, but
still scary. You don't know what the damage is yet.
I was banged up.
Yeah, they had to operate, right?
They had to stitch me up. Yeah, a bunch of stitches all across here and my neck, my back and my neck. And that was the scariest. The gun pointing and all that stuff, you know. You know, when you're doing business with bad people, you know, they want to make sure that you don't rat them out and stuff. So that's a different story if you want me to share that.
That's when you were trying to make a living?
Yeah, that was when I was full blown just on the streets trying to make, you know, make some money.
So what happened?
So I was picking up a lot of weight. And we was in a trap house in Manhattan. The guy I worked for, I guess people were getting arrested. And I said, I'm just here to make some money. You know what I mean? And so he opened up a safe. He had maybe like a couple $100,000 in there. And, you know, yeah, ecstasy, the bliss of that, all the, you know. And he pulls a gun out on me and says, Patty, I'm telling you right now, if you ever cross me, I'll blow your fucking brains out. So that was right next to the stabbing. And that makes you think like, yo, I'm really, you know, this is no game.
You're in deep.
You know, you don't have to worry about the cops now. You got to worry about this, you know. So,
you were in pretty deep, bro.
I was in deep.
And do you think your addiction was fueling this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Does it ever hit you, man? You're like, damn, what am I doing? Like, do you ever have that thought ever?
At that time, it was just to get that next one. You know, I mean, let's try to make this money. You know, like you're talking about $20,000 re-ups. So, I'm really talking. This is the first time I'm talking about.
How long you go down that path, man?
28. I stopped. I'm 40 now. 28. I gave it all up. I was dying. You know what I mean?
So by 28 years old, you're like, you're facing death or jail or being killed.
I wasn't worried about no prison because I thought I was smarter. But it could happen anytime. All somebody has to do is, you know, I had safes, you know, bolted to the floor. I had the wood bolted to the door for the trap houses. You know, they wouldn't be able to kick in. You know, all that stuff that, you know, I laugh because, you know, so many people think they're tough and they're from the streets. They say they're from, real people from the streets don't say that they're from where they're from. They don't like talk about it. They're quiet. Real badasses don't. Today I am because I'm on the Beck Lover show. And, you know.
It's a close chapter in your book.
Oh, yeah. No, today is a totally different story. But back then it was sex, money, drugs, hustling, fighting, and trying to make money. You know what I mean? That's it.
So when do you, because if you listen, you're on oxys. It's no joke.
No.
Once you're addicted to those, it's the equivalent of heroin. Yes,
yeah, I was doing like 480s a day.
Did you ever do heroin?
Mm-hmm.
Shot it up?
One time.
Smoked it? Sniffed it, I mean, sorry.
No, I only shot dope once. My thing was oxys. Sniff it.
So, yeah, that's a crazy addiction. I've lost people to it, man. I've lost serious people to it.
That I look back at now and say, I can't believe, because 480s.
It's so hard to get out of that.
480s. If I get surgery now and they prescribe me like a 5 milligram, that's like, it will wipe me out. So I don't even, like when I get surgeries and stuff.
You don't even take it, huh?
I have to take it because, you know.
The pain.
Yeah.
Are you scared though, even when they prescribe it?
No, I'm not, because I did the work. I went to AA and did the step work 4 times.
It doesn't trigger anything?
When you're done, when you're badly beaten and broken in life, and you're tired, you're done.
So what made you change?
I was in my apartment. I was in a neighboring town, and I was pale white. I couldn't hold any food. I was throwing up.
At this point, you had gotten skinny?
Yeah.
Because you've always been bulky and strong.
I was.
You and your brothers.
I was pale white. I wasn't really that skinny, but I was just, I was dying. And I think I tried like a rehab or two before, like this last part. And I just woke up one morning and I wasn't, you know, I was filthy, disgusting. I wasn't taking showers. I would literally buy clothes.
It was affecting every aspect of your life.
Bro, I was buying clothes, throwing it in the closet and just wouldn't wash them because I had no energy. I was just drinking 40s, sniffing oxys, smoking cigarettes, and just like very, very sick person.
So you got up to a very high level of tolerance at one point?
Yeah, it always builds.
So how did you, you have to keep selling to fund the habit or like what? So like what was like, explain the cycle, man. You're not working a real job, so how the fuck you doing this shit?
Wake up, make some sales, go to the city, re-up, come home, make some more sales, get high, go to bed. Wake up, repeat.
So still no life. There's no high life here.
There's no life. It's just making empty promises and
try to make money to keep the habit going.
That's it.
It's so just would you say it's safe to say at this point you're completely a slave to your habit?
Slave to my habit.
And if you don't get it in your system,
showers.
Explain to people what happens when you can't get that in your system and you're addicted.
If you don't get that next one, you're going to be sweaty, achy, body pains all over, throwing up. It's like a nightmare that never ends. It's the worst feeling. Being dope sick and going through withdrawals is the worst feeling ever.
Have you been through it a few times? Oh,
big, without a doubt. Yeah, I mean, everybody has. If you go through oxys or Percocets or heroin.
Yeah, I've seen a friend of mine he passed away. God rest his soul.
Sorry to hear that.
He didn't get it. We're on our way to a wedding. I didn't even know his problem was like that bad.
We had it well.
He didn't have a car. So yeah, I knew he had a problem, but not to that extent. I didn't realize how bad it was. So we're driving to a wedding, and I'm like, we're late to the wedding because I went to pick him up. He had no car.
Yeah.
So I'm leaving. He goes, "You got to take me here now. You got to take me here." I'm like, "Dude, we have to go to the wedding. You don't understand. If I don't get it, I'm going to." He starts going fucking crazy.
Where's that, New York?
Yeah. He lived in New York. And he's like, "If you don't take me now to get these pills, I'm going to lose my fucking mind. I'm going to start sweating. I'm going to start throwing up. Like, I have to get it."
Yeah.
And that's when I realized this shit just takes over you completely.
You took your life. You didn't bring him.
Yeah, because he didn't want to go through. I didn't realize the pain that was associated with it. So I tell people, no matter what you're going through, man, from my understanding, he never even was like a user like that. He was prescribed this shit and he got hooked on it.
That's what most people do. Doctors were selling it back in the day by the hundreds of bottles at a time. The doctors back then were, I don't know about now because I've been at the game and I don't promote that. You know, any drug dealers that I ever, if I know any drug dealers, I'm staying away from them. But back then, doctors, they were like, my guy would get like 50 bottles at a time, 100 perks on each bottle. I'm talking like major hitters and up and down New York City. You know, anybody from Jersey, we go to North Jersey, we go to the city. Anybody from South, they go to Camden and all that. But yeah, it comes to a point where if you know anybody who's taking OxyContin, you cannot trust them. They don't want to go to jail.
If they're addicted to them, yeah.
They will throw you under the bus before, faster than, you know, all I say you can trust them, you can't, because they need that next one and they will rat you out. They'll rat you out. That's also what made me stop too, besides dying, is I ain't trying to go to jail because this guy got caught with a couple of Percocets. You know, so
you got ratted on a lot.
It's a fucking nightmare. I don't think so. I've gotten I don't think so. I didn't really hang out with.
Did you ever do any more time besides juvie?
No, I don't have any felons. Thank God.
So you dodged all those bullets.
I did dodge those big bullets. Yeah. Most of my shit was fucking fighting. One time with like 8 bags of weed, hustling, and I came close a couple times. Well, a guy lived up the street, one of my second guys that was hustling major weight. They went to his house and raided his whole shit. He had bottles and bottles. I think he did some time. I haven't heard from him since. But I lived a block away, and my name was on a list with like 10 other people. That was the last year. There was a list going around. They were just locking people up in Jersey. They wanted it to stop.
Because people are ODing.
Well, I don't know if they're ODing, but it was just becoming a fucking nightmare. you know?
So when does Patrick Tansey wake up and say, I got to change my life? How did that change? I mean, it's not, brother, I've had people on the show who have been through what you've been through.
Yeah.
And they explain what the hell they went through. How did you get to the point where you're like, I can't do this no more. I have to fight back somehow and take control of my life again.
When my way stopped, when my way didn't work, eventually it ended. I said, I finally gave up and said, I lost. I can't, you know, my bright idea was, you know, hustle, make, be rich. And you know, like the fucking Godfather,
Tony Montana.
And I was, you know, I woke up one morning after a lot of pain, a lot of trying, like I said, two rehabs and jail time and this and that, and lost all my friends. At this point, no friends were wanting to hang around me, all hanging out with all just dirt bags.
People you don't even really know or trust.
Can't trust anybody.
With.
Yeah, just a complete. I missed so many holidays with my family because they kicked me out. That, you know, I was missing life, but I lost. I woke up and said I lost. So,
what did you do?
I called my brother Joey. I called Joe. I said, Joe, I need to get a bed, go to the hospital. I'm done. And
you're gonna go through it.
Yeah,
withdraw.
Yeah. Well, so I called him. He gave me Suboxone. I gave him.
And what does that do for someone that's addicted?
All right. So Suboxone is what it leans you off of dope, and then after that they lean you off of Suboxone, and then you still got to do 3 days of pain of not sleeping and stuff, but it's like half as.
It's not as it mitigates the effects of that withdrawal.
Yeah, yeah.
If you try to do it raw.
Oh, I know. I
there's some people that
I'm
have.
A tough guy, but I couldn't do that.
And what's crazy is they say like you feel like you're gonna die, but it won't kill you. But if you're really addicted to alcohol, it will kill you.
Alcohol will kill you,
which is so crazy. And I never understood how I didn't get addicted to alcohol when I drink as much as I drink a lot, brother. I'm not proud of it. For a brief moment in my life, I was out every fucking night. I don't know how. Like, how does? I don't even understand. Like if there was an addiction, like how come I wasn't addicted? I drank bottles of it, bro. Is something you have to be born with, or like
I was born an alcoholic.
How does alcohol? How do people, like if I was drinking a shitload,
yeah,
how come I never got addicted?
What, for like a year straight you were drinking?
I'm talking about for a decent part of my life,
right? That's because you're Beck's lover.
No, but is it something genetic? Like I never understood that, because I'm like, if there was an addiction to this, then I should have been addicted. I drank shitloads of it. Shitloads.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's weird, but they say that addiction is the one that kills you. When you try to quit alcohol, you'll die.
Yeah, you will. You'll have seizures.
Because Lilo Brancato said that on my show, the guy from Bronxville.
Okay, yeah, I think I've seen him on a movie or something like that.
But they say the one when you're going through the heroin withdrawal or the opioid withdrawal, they say it's the worst fucking thing. Sweating, pain,
he's
vomiting.
Sober. He's sober right now too, that kid, right?
Yeah, yeah. He had,
good
he
for
went
him.
To jail though, man, you know?
Good for him, yeah. Same.
He got
same
shot because of it.
It happens.
He got happens. Shot. He almost died.
You fuck around, you find out.
And a police officer died, unfortunately.
Oh, that's not, yeah.
The guy he was with shot the cop.
Really?
Yeah, destroyed his act. This guy was an A-list celebrity, making movies with De Niro. He threw his whole fucking career away for that shit. He's trying to make a comeback, but it's horrible.
Prayers to the family.
When that type of addiction takes over your life.
Yeah, I didn't want to go that way.
Call your older brother. You're like, Joe, I'm in trouble.
Call my brother. Said, Joe.
What does he say now?
He's using too, but you know, I didn't have enough energy to make a phone call. He knew some people, whatever, and so he gave me some boxes. I gave him a couple blues, and that was it. I was living in an apartment with a roommate. My roommate was a fucking piece of shit too. He kept upping the rent because he was jealous of making so much money. I was still making money, but I was dying. I couldn't eat. Beck, I was dying. I was smelly shower.
There was a time I remember seeing you years ago. You
fucking
did not
mess.
Look well, bro. You guys did not look healthy. You, a lot of kids from the neighborhood, I'm like, these kids are, they're not on a good path. And I, you know, I always loved all you. I used to tell me, come on, guys, you guys can do better. Than I used to tell everyone at the park.
Yeah. Well, at that point, already three of my good friends already passed away. You know, rest in peace, Dan Graham. And a couple other people. And so, you know, it was death or jail. That was my way out.
Or be killed from criminals, because you don't know what's going to happen, bro.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not in your right state and you can't think.
I didn't really have a lot of enemies back then.
So you take, your brother helps you. So then what's the
I
next part?
I called up for a bed.
What is it, like a
hospital
treatment center?
Yeah, it was given away free.
State helps?
The state. Thank God, the state, this particular hospital, I don't want to really mention names. They took me in for like this. I've been there a couple of times already, and I got a bed this time. You know, again, I had a I went through a couple detoxes in it, so I knew, you know, what
you
do.
What you were up against.
And I went to AA one time. You know, I started going to AA when I was 12 years old after I got locked up that first time. I was the youngest guy in the room, all older guys, 12 years old. The judge mandated me go to AA. That's how much I was drinking.
I think AA is an amazing organization.
Saved my life. It's the only way for me. There's other ways for me, hands down, 12 steps. And so, all right, I'll finish.
So what do you go through to get sober?
So I go to that detox and did a couple of days there. They fucking kicked me out of detox because I was still acting a fool. Just because I want to stop doesn't mean I will stop. You know, when you stop, when you get sober, it doesn't mean everything else gets better. You have to, you know, stop fucking around in life. You know, there's process of getting rid of everything that's not good.
And rebuilding.
And rebuilding. So the kid was smoking tea leaves in there, popping sockets. We were smoking tea leaves after like day two of Suboxone maintenance. And he gave me some shots for the alcohol. They kicked me out because he rats me out and says that I did it. So now I got a detox rest on, I didn't have a home now. So my mom said, if you stay, she had a brand new couch. If you stay sober, you can sleep on the couch. No cell phone, none of that. No computer.
Yeah, not be cut off from the outside world.
Not to be trusted because I was.
Can't blame her.
No. So I sweated the rest of it out. December 28, 2010 when I got sober. I was still detoxing from OxyContin. No, 2 days later, I was sweating. Her brand new couch was a mess. Gone. Toast.
Throw up.
Sweat. We got rid of that couch.
Well, it saved your life.
My mom saved my life. But my mom's, before that, the tough love saved my life. Because any parent that allows their children or family members to live in the house getting high, they're just going to rob you and it's going to be a nightmare. You're going to be missing shit.
Yeah. Throw them out.
And you might find your family member dead in the house. You know what I mean? Can't give them money. So then I found AA. So I went to AA. And I
took it serious.
Oh, well, I wanted to get, you know, I detoxed on, you know, when New Year's was, the bowls were popping. Bah, 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 bah. And I lived by the water. You could see the fireworks. If I can get through that, I can get through any day.
And you said this year's going to be my year.
You can get through New Year's when everybody in the world's partying. You can get through anything.
Yeah, I haven't drank in over a decade. I don't miss it at all. I mean, I didn't have to go the route you did.
Yeah,
thank God I wasn't addicted to it like that, and I did have control over it. But I think the world would be a much better place without alcohol.
God does play a major part, because without the Creator, none of this would have happened. And we wouldn't be sitting here today, me helping many, many, many addicts all over East Coast. And this year alone, it's gonna double. But detox, went to AA, did an acid.
So how much time until to get you really clean and good?
For somebody to, you can trust someone again?
Well, when did you start trusting yourself?
Oh, man.
Did you get the urge? Were you scared? I mean, like, what put me in your mind, man?
What you have to do is
battling the monkey.
You gotta go to meetings every day, and I was scared. I was scared, but I wanted it. I wanted to stay clean.
Like, once you got it all out of your system.
It doesn't stop, though. That's
the urge doesn't, but physically, do you feel better?
Not right
away. After you go through all the withdrawal?
Not right away. It took me like 2 months, 2.5 months to be able to, like, I would say 2 months.
Did you ever get any strong urges during those 2 months? And what did you do to fight it?
I don't know. I've had some urges, but again, this is my 14 year sober, so. It was tough. The first year is always hard. You just got to really hold on, go to meetings, make your phone calls, get a sponsor. You have to really, you know, it was a nightmare. But after like 6 months, you start to build a routine. A routine helps.
What did you add into your life that was positive?
Well, I started walking around town. I did hobbies. I had a computer game. I had a meeting in the morning. There was a bus that took me out after care program back to the hospital. So I kept busy. Did that meeting, the bus, boom, in a meeting, computer work, TV, repeat. They told me you have to stay busy because
idle mind is a fertile ground for the devil.
Yes. And so I just did what they did. I was willing to do whatever it took. My sponsor said stand out of the rain. I would stand out of the rain. I was done with that life.
You were committed. So truly, and I agree with this, Same thing with cigarettes, which I'm about to kick because I started after 10 years again. Because you can go through a hard time, and that's where that devil comes back. Oh, just take this, you'll feel better. No, don't. I regret starting again. I would have never thought I'd smoke cigarettes again. So you start rebuilding some better habits. You go through this entire process to get free from the clutches of drugs. I see you start looking healthier. You look ripped. You know, you're a completely different person than back then.
Yeah.
You know, I got to be honest with you. I never had a problem with you. I always liked you, but I just, like, you don't want to be around that.
I was a bad guy back then.
I didn't want to really be around that. And there was a lot of people we grew up with. I was like, I just don't want to be around this. This is not the world I want.
It wasn't safe.
It wasn't safe. Even if me and you were best friends, you could be on a bad trip or whatever. Next thing you know, we're fucking fist fighting.
That would have never happened. But
not with me. But these things can happen because it's not you.
I would say it's not safe because of the people I hung around and what we did. You know? Not particularly.
I don't want to be offered every 2 minutes, take this.
Well, the cops might arrest you also.
Yeah, just for being an associate.
Just for being an asshole.
Yeah. So, you know, and I mean, we had some crazy nights. You know, mischief night, the night before Halloween. I'll never forget that night where fucking guys were getting chased with fucking batons. I was lucky. For some reason, the cops always liked me. I don't know. I ran the other way.
You're guys, a humble guy.
You guys ran that way. I ran the other way. Even though I wasn't doing anything, I wasn't fucking up the houses, nothing. I never liked that shit, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be honest here every once in a while and say I'm some fucking bitch who wasn't hanging out with the rest of the town. I came out just to say what's up to everyone. You guys were fucking throwing toilet paper on everyone's houses, and then you guys fought some fucking car from another town. You guys egged the car. You were there for
that. I have so many stories.
And they came out, and it was fucking brawl. I had nothing to do with it. I was just chilling, like, yo, these fucking guys are wild tonight.
And
then the cops came out with these massive billy clubs. I never seen.
Yeah, Mischief Night was
I remember he threw a fucking billy club at one of our boys. I want to say his name. It hit him right in his back. I was dying laughing. It was, for me, it was funny because I'm like, I dodged the bullet and I wasn't doing what the fuck you guys were doing.
Oh, man. We had so many fights back then.
I was Beck Lover, bro.
Listen, people tell me all the time, remember this time? I'm like, listen, I'm just happy I survived it.
What do you want to tell that addict that's out there right now? If they're listening to this, they're hooked on pills, they're hooked on some type of crazy drug, they know their life's not in their hands right now, they know they're being controlled by a substance. What would you say to them to give them the strength they need to make the change that you did?
I'm going to say you're going to die from fentanyl if you don't stop using. Because fentanyl's taking everybody out. Half my friends are gone.
You're playing roulette. Literally roulette.
You're dead. If you're still doing dope and pills,
it's just a matter of time.
It's only a matter of time. Nowadays, You're done. You need to go figure it out, surrender, go to a 12-step program, which, you know, there's many people helping. A life recovered guy online has helped me. He helps many, many people. Reach out to him. AA, NA, therapy. You need to stop because you don't have too much longer. Not with fentanyl, and it's in everything. I have addicts. I still talk to some friends. I try to, you know, I'm out here in the streets and trying to help people. And I had a friend last week say he was smoking crack with one of his buddies, and he was smoking it, and boom, fentanyl was in. He died right in front of him. That's just last
even
week.
In crack.
It's in crack. It's in weed. I would say if you smoke weed, you better go to a dispensary. But. Yeah, you have to. The game's over. You had your fun. Give it up. Stop hurting your family. Stop hurting your friends.
You're ahead right now. Quit while you're still ahead.
Yeah. It's not going to end well for
so
you.
So even in weed.
It's in weed. I've heard a couple stories in weed. It's definitely in crack. It's definitely, there's no dope anymore. It's all fentanyl. New York City is all fentanyl. In recovery alone, when people go out, they die because it's fentanyl now. So when you are really serious about getting sober or clean, go to AA/NA. My suggestion would be, but there's other ways again, and be committed, because your life is worth so much more than what you think. You have so much to offer life, but you just don't see it. And you keep saying the same thing we all say, tomorrow, you know, tomorrow never comes. So please, if you're struggling from addiction, please get help. The game is over. It's done. Fentanyl's going to take you out. And, you know, it's not worth it.
And you can still have an amazing life if you just get clean.
Look what I'm doing. I'm
in. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. So not only do you get...
And I love you guys. If you're struggling with addiction, Jump Blade loves you. I love you. And you contact Beck or me, and we'll try to help you out. If I live on the East Coast, Jersey, reach out to me. I'll try to get you a bed. I know people that can get you into a hospital free if you're homeless. I know people inside. They'll cut the line, text me, inbox me. I help people like that too, get people into treatment centers.
So you get out of this vicious cycle of addiction. You sober up. It's a long battle just to get back to normal.
Yeah, it takes a while.
You go from there. You end up getting good career going for yourself. Good job. You're working hard. You're staying clean. How many years into staying clean do you finally decide, okay, now I want to help others get out of hell?
Well, when you go to AA, the program is about my sponsor. He was a guru. He was into Buddhism. He was meditating in front of a meeting, a men's meeting for like an hour. So I went up to like him and was like, listen, I don't know anything about this program. I need you to save my life. His name's Jeff G. And he goes, all right, I want you to call me every day and go to me. So I took direction. After like a couple months, he was like, all right, now I want you to help others. So now he was making me call other people. So it's like right away, you're involved and you're learning how to help people and give back. And that's what AA does. And, you know, I'm an addict. I'm an alcoholic. So, but I chose to do, the first thing I do is I drink. So AA was like the first program. So I go there and then he's having me do a coffee commitment, greeted commitment. You know, there's jobs, little jobs to build a self-esteem, to build, you know, your life up so you're worth something. And so after like 6 months, I felt good. After like a year, then after I completed the 12 steps, the 12 step is give it back. So now I'm sponsoring guys, you know, I'm bringing them to the work. So I started developing this give back lifestyle. My sponsor wasn't playing. It was either you're going to help or, you know. And so after a year, I started helping people. I sponsored like 12 guys. So I'm already helping people.
Have you lost any friends you tried to help recently?
I have.
What is that like, man, when you're trying and you feel like they might get through it and then they just, boom, they relapse and they're gone?
Two of my sponsees went out after they did the work, though. You know, you have to continuously go to the program and you know, apply the steps in your life. And not everybody gets it. Everybody thinks they, like, some people hold on to their secrets, like, or they hide who they are just to get, like, the girlfriend or to get some money or some job. But they really, truly didn't give themselves to the program, or they didn't complete the steps, and they go out and pick up again. And so it's a 12-step program. It's not just going to meetings. And so I did the work with some people, and I lost some friends, and I lost some real, half my friends are dead. But you know, a lot of the people, they're gone from drugs. And in sobriety and recovery, I would say the 14 years I've been there, we had a lot of good guys that went on trips, basketball trips, and a couple of things. I would say maybe about 20 of those guys, and I maybe only really knew about 40 people. They're gone. Those 20 guys are gone. Two a year. Yeah, it's very, very sad. Good, great guys. It's so sad because, like, the best guys, the most funny or outgoing, those are the people that usually go out, you know, make people laugh. It's those guys, like comedians. They're gone. It's the same kind of people. It's like those, damn, I wish they were here. You know, it's those, and it's very sad because, you know, it's not like I don't know anybody anymore. You know, I know people that are older guys, but in recovery, we have a blast, though. In recovery, you know, there's so many different, you know, Maryland trips to, there's getaways and rafting trips. You know, these recovery things, dances, we have sober dances and New Year's conventions. There's so much to do. Half the world's in recovery. People don't really know.
Yeah, man.
Half the world.
You want to know how many people in recovery? Just download the AA app and look at how many meetings. I was blown away. I couldn't. believe how many meetings go on in a half hour time period all over the city, the state, the country. It's unreal. It's like the unspoken pandemic, man.
Yeah. Big shout out to Matthew from At Life Recovered. He's a friend on my list. He really is the only person on Instagram that helps people. The other people, it's all about for themselves. I just want to say that. This guy, I have a half a million story up right now, but he just started going into a hospital helping get people in. And I love people like that, because anybody who helps my people that are struggling with addiction or mental illness, because it goes hand in hand, I have respect for. So big shout out to him. And the 12 steps of AA works, but you have to be all in. You know what I mean? And you can't half-ass it. Like, if you go to, you understand, you go to work, you produce, you keep showing up. If you stop going to work, you're not going to get paid. It's really simple. And people fuck around. People want to test it and say, oh, you know, I want to fuck this girl, or I'll go to a meeting tomorrow. And they haven't completed their 12 steps. It's always business before pleasure. Business before pleasure. You know, make your meetings, make your calls, then you can hang out with the girl. You know what I mean? It's structure. You didn't have it before. Structure now. And that's how it works. And obviously God and the fellowship. You know, half the world's in recovery. There's so much shit to do. I just came from Hawaii cliff jump with a bunch of my friends, my crew.
Yeah. So talk to us about Jump Life Crew, man. What is this endeavor you've started?
Oh, we're the fucking best. So Jump Life Crew, website's coming out soon. It's under construction. And
thanks for the merch.
Yeah, man.
Custom Jump Life Crew.
Yes, sir.
Hoodie with the Beck Lover logo on it.
You know it.
So how did you get this idea, man, to start jumping off high cliffs to bring attention to substance abuse?
Well, first of all, my brother passed away, Joey Tanzi. Rest in peace, Joey.
Rest in peace, Big Joe.
We went to Costa Rica sober, crushed Costa Rica.
I saw you guys jumping off waterfalls.
Oh, bro, I'm getting chills right now.
That trip was one of the best trips of your life.
Awesome waterfall. Like, I think it was like 60, 70 foot.
I saw him just do a flip right off that motherfucker. Your brother was so athletic.
Yeah. That was a 30-footer, but we did a couple of those. Costa Rica is such an amazing place. We were like a couple years sober. So he got sober too after I got sober. I helped him get sober.
So basically he gave you the little boost in the beginning, and then he saw you did it. And
that's
he's like,
right.
And you're like, and what were you telling your brother?
That's right.
Like,
God,
life is better. Yeah. Life's better like this, bro.
He saw me reading from the, you know, I was in the kitchen just reading, you know what I mean? My sponsor told me, you make sure you read a couple, like a chapter or a couple pages a day. And he would see me in the kitchen and be like, what are you doing? Eventually he got sober. So he actually saved my life. And then he saw me doing this, and he was like, I'm going to give it a shot. But people think that I helped him. A lot of people say, you know, my brother used to say, Patrick saved my life. No, Joey saved my life. And so we were like a couple years sober. I think I had like five. This was 7 years ago, maybe. That was like the best time, because we didn't even know we were going to be cliff jumping. We just wanted to go on vacation, you know, Costa Rica. Why not? Fuck it. And we were walking across this extreme tour place, and Joey was like, yo, you want to go cliff jumping? He goes, zip lining, cliff jumping and all that. I'm like, fuck it, let's do it. Because we're adrenaline junkies, you know. Most addicts are adrenaline junkies. And we got in a van to drive like 3 hours or 2 hours to the first waterfall. It was like all in nature, off-road, just a super adventure. Started jumping off waterfalls, and I fell in love with it right away. You know, it was like nature, hiking to, not only hiking, like being nature is one thing, but hiking to a water spot just to swim or cliff jump. Now you're like, now we're talking about like my basketball days. It just made me feel alive. You know, it gives me something to do. I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever done. So anyway, he jumps off first. I my first jump ever, I tried to do a backflip. You know, he did a perfect backflip. I busted my fucking ass, had like a concussion. But we stayed and we did some jumps, a huge waterfall after that. And that started it all. That was like, I'm going to do this. But then he passed away like a year and a half, 2 years later. And I don't know. I just, something came into me and said, go to the woods. you know, so I just started looking at stuff up online. And so did some people do cliff jumping in the States. I got my cousin Jeffo and bought a drone because no one wanted to tell me where the spots were. And it's out of respect. No one wants to, you know, no one's going to tell you where spots are because they don't want you littering and messing up the spots. So I said, all right, fuck it. I'm just going to go. And I just found a couple spots here and there. Met a couple amazing people. I started showing up just like I did AA. They started trusting me. And they gave me a chance, and then I started learning different types of stunts. You know, and I'm 40 years old now. I was 39 when I started. And I said, you know what? Wouldn't it be something if I start bringing people to nature, like addicts and regular people? And so I brought like 20 people that just last year alone, you know, separate times. Everybody that I bring loves it. They're all from recovery and all people with problem, mental illness. So then I started, I met one of my great friends, Matt, upstate. Matt Dunn, big shout out to Matt Dunn. The guy's unbelievable, and he all his crew up there. And more and more people were all hanging out, and Matt started teaching me how to do different things, and he's 20 years old. The guy's jump, you know, he does like 60, 70 foot triple backflips. You know what I mean? Like just some wild shit that you see online. And that, so I'm like 4 year old, but I'm an apprentice to Matt. You know what I mean? Like,
so Jump Life Crew, you invite people that are fighting addiction or have recovered to come and celebrate life by basically jumping off these beautiful places,
yeah,
camaraderie together, and remind each other about how lucky you guys are to not still be struggling with that as bad, because it never goes away, the battle, right? Never, yeah, goes away.
Oh, the battle, it does go away.
It does
go away. You have to do the work. So cliff jumping and Jump Life Crew is separate. Jump Life Crew is bringing people to nature, teaching them principles, you know, preparation, planning, trusting, commitment. It gives you all aspects about life. So I bring you to these spots, and we help addicts, give them hobbies, activities. We use use nature to heal people, because nature is one of the most powerful things on earth besides the ocean. And I believe, and it has worked for me, it has healed me, and it will heal the rest of the world. And I'm going to promote it to the world, and it's going to help so many addicts that are about to stop using fentanyl, and they can come check me out. And so, yeah, my website's, there's going to be some merch. There's going to be contacts where I'm going to be bringing people to different spots to swim. And the spots that I have are just not cliff jumping spots. There's many other swim spots where you can barbecue. I brought people to barbecue. It is such an amazing time. And it is going to be the best thing you've ever seen in your life. Crystal blue water, crystal green water on Saturday and Sunday. You cannot beat it. A water park is not better than where I'm going to bring you. Nope.
So jumplifecrew.com, all together, jumplifecrew.com.
That's the website.
They can see, do you post where you're going to be next, or how does that work? Or,
well, we're under construction right now. We're almost done. We're with the lawyers, and we're almost done with the trademark.
Actually, should get some waivers.
We're going to work on that. I actually have a meeting after this with my design, and my, because, you know, I'm not good with computers, so I have someone who is a professional. She's helping me with that. But that's almost done before the Oregon trip. That'll be up. And there's going to be services and goods. There's going to be a couple different things going on. But the logo's mine. And really, I want to help so many people. You know, that's my passion. The cliff jumping is something separate. That's Jump Life too. But my passion is helping people heal. Because, you know, when you lose so many friends in your life from addiction, it hurts. And you know the pain. It hurts. It's not cool. It's not cool to brag what it used to be like. It's cool to give back. And for me, it's love. It's God. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to help save a fucking life. I'm not trying to get rich. I already have a career. I already have a job. I'm comfortable. I'm not really into like being all famous and shit. I really want to just fucking help my people, because they're struggling right now, and people aren't going to make it. They're not going to make it. And so I have a couple people helping me, and the Cliff Jumpers up in upstate and PA. PA, Jersey, and New York is Jump Life. And I'm very appreciative too, because without them, I needed their help to promote this. You know, because you don't just go in somebody's house and say, I'm going to go into your jump spots. No, you got to earn your stripes. And on the way, while doing that, I make videos and you'll hear it. There's a whole bunch of things on my Instagram, Patrick10015. You'll see I promote people's message to the world, whether we're in Hawaii or we're in the States or Costa Rica. I like to show people their message and bring hope and love. We need more love onto Earth. We do. We need more love, and we're just too selfish right now. So Jump Life means jumpstart your life, giving you guys second chances, and hope that you take it because you deserve it. That's what it's about, giving back.
And you are testament that no matter how dark your life is, no matter how far away from normal you might be at this moment, if you're listening to this,
yeah,
as long as you have air in your lungs, you can always make a comeback.
That's right. You got a heartbeat. I've been through tons of trauma. I don't talk about it much. It's probably the first time I've ever said anything that's on your show. But I do it so somebody could hear it and say, wow, he's been through a lot, and look what he's doing. He's actually giving back. He's not like these other people that are just talking and just trying to promote themselves. I could care less about that. You know what I mean? I've already lived that life. I'm retired. You know, I'm just having fun using rope swings. We have rope swings. We have natural water slides, and
my just videos, nature, man. Nature.
It's amazing. The energy is probably my second love after my family. Yeah. Nature is where it's at. Anything that's to do with nature, I'm very spiritual, so anything to do with nature or swimming out of the ordinary, I'm in.
You heard it here, folks. Hopefully this group of people continues to grow. It's another episode of the Beck Lover Podcast, where you might just learn a thing or two about life. We had Patrick Tanzi in the house, jumplifecrew.com. Jump life. You can jump into a new life. That's what it symbolizes. It does not matter where you are or where you are today. It's where you could be tomorrow. If you just take that decision, take that time and say, you know what? I had enough. I've hurt everybody around me, but I'm hurting myself more than anybody. It's time to jump into a new life with my man, Patrick Tanzi. Jump life.
Thanks, Beck.
Crew.com. We'll see you on the next episode of...